Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests. Proven in all 50 states, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving a tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, concerns, or comments like the gentleman who called and said the good way to get rid of field mice or voles or things like that is shoot honey down into the hole where you know they are coming in and out of, and then put cayenne pepper down there too. I mean, that's a good one. And thanks for having me on your show. You can give a call and we can talk about plant selection, the ups and downs and all arounds of the annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, house plants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, your trees, your shrubs, your vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Greg is producing today, and he will be the one that answers the phone. He'll ask for your first name and where you're calling from, and that's about all we need. Then when we go on air, I will ask you to go ahead and what your question is or comment. And during the week, I do landscape consulting, where I come to your home and do a walk and talk. You can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. The homepage will be an email address and a phone number, and you can contact me, and we can schedule a walk and talk. And I'll share with 40-plus years of experience in the outdoors with plant material here in the metro area. And also, we can talk about anything you like when I'm there. If you don't want to talk about your plants, we can just, you know, talk about anything. I used to play pinochle, and I don't know if I can remember how to play pinochle, but if you'd like to play pinochle, we can do that. Anyway, now a special recognition for individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Today's tip of the trowel goes out to a couple different plant societies. I don't know how many plant societies there are in the metropolitan area, but you can go to the Missouri Botanical Garden, mobot.org, and we'll list, you know, lots of different plant societies. Here's some of the ones that I just picked out because I think they have really cool names. Here's Herbs for Health and Fun Club. So that's a garden club. It's in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and they got all kinds of things going on with that. So Herbs for Health and Fun Club. Then there's also the Hoe and Hope Garden Club. Those are two that are really kind of unique as far as their names go. The Lewis and Clark Garden Club, I mean, that doesn't sound that totally wild and crazy. But there is just so many different garden clubs and throughout the entire metro area. The Perennial Garden Club of Clark County. To be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure where Clark County is, but there is a Perennial Garden Club there. And let's see what else we might have here. Oh, Sprig and Twig Garden Club. They meet in Florissant. So Sprig and Twig Garden Club. So tip of the trowel goes out to those garden clubs, as well as all the people who, you know, belong to various garden clubs. Membership-wise, that is a place where you can get some wonderfully great information, you know, from people that are in the field, that are fooling with this plant material on a regular basis and insight. So you don't necessarily realize that when you're there, yes, the focus is going to be on one particular type of plant, particularly, let's say, if it's a Kirkwood Iris Society or something like that. But there's going to be discussions concerning all kinds of different things because your plant material in your yard is impacted by lots of other things. It's just concentrating on one thing is not necessarily going to make it so you're going to have great success with that. Realize that there's a whole big picture that you have to really get into. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, February is still wintertime. There's no getting around it, but start watching out. It's a little bit early because we're only in the, what is this, the third, fourth, fifth? I don't know how many days. What? End of February. But this time of year, what you can start possibly seeing, there's a variety of dogwood. It's a cornelian cherry. It's not the classic dogwood with the big white flowers or the pink flowers or the red flowers or whatever. This has small yellow flowers. And it's in the dogwood family, though. And plant material is all arranged family-wise according to the flower structure. How many this, how many that, the, you know, the stamens, the sepals, and all this other stuff. So the cornelian cherry is one of the first things to bloom. Also this time of year, in another couple weeks, the hamamelis, all the witch hazels. Witch hazels, there's some from the Orient. There's some that are native to this region. They have yellow flowers. They have orange flowers. And the majority of them are fragrant as well. So they're going to be blooming also this time of year in another couple weeks. Aranthus, the winter aconite, it has yellowish flowers. And the Clatonia, the spring beauty, growing up in Ellisville, our front yard, way back when, I guess, you know, when the builder did the house, they didn't tear down a lot of the maple trees and, you know, all the natural soil. So we always had one side of our driveway was filled with the spring beauties. I didn't have any idea what they were when I was growing up. But then later on, I found out that those were Clatonia spring beauty. So other things, the Dutch crocus is going to be in flower, the Galanthus of snowdrops, and then the perennial Helleborus. They're going to be flowering too. Now, the Helleborus is an evergreen perennial. Its flowers hang on the underside of the leaf, so it's a little bit tough to see. But I will say there is some Helleborus here downtown along Market Street. And when I was coming back up from the arch grounds to come to the station, I looked over and saw them. Ooh, they looked like they got scorched by the cold, but they're tough. They're going to come back. So the evergreen quality of something like that is going to be a little iffy. But anyway. So those are things that you could see blooming in the next week or two, or who knows, depending upon the weather. Let's go now to Arnold, and that's where Jim lives. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I just had a couple questions. I'm thinking about making me a box garden, you know, 4x4 by 8, I don't know, what is it, like 8 or 10 high, and putting dirt in it, because I have problems with weeds all the time, trying to keep them out of my garden. So I think that's kind of the idea I'm going with. What kind of soil should I start that with? I mean, last time I put some soil in my yard when I built my house and I wanted a garden, I just got a guy with a dump truck and it said topsoil. So I put it in there and it kind of worked, but I don't know if it's the best thing to start this project with.
Well, when you get soil like that, you never know what there actually is in the soil. So I would, to be honest with you, go to St. Louis Composting because they text, you know, they check everything on a routine basis for all kinds of problematic things. and they watch, you know, for weed germination. And if they start to see weeds in a certain, let's say, pile, then consequently, they're not going to sell that anymore. So until they can get the weed circumstance taken care of. But if you just, you know, bring in topsoil, I would get a topsoil blend. They have the SLC raised bed mix. I would contact them and go from that standpoint.
Okay. And I also had another question.
Sure.
When I had my house built, my mom and dad got me a Bradford pear tree that I planted in my front yard, which are really nice looking and all that kind of stuff. But I, from what I understand, they have an issue with the splintering branches off, and maybe like at some point it would end up killing the tree.
Right.
Tearing up. Is there anything that a person can do to try to counteract that before it becomes an issue?
Basically, what you can do is you can drill holes in the major trunks, because usually about 4 or 5 feet, 3 feet, depending upon the, you know, particular specimen, you start to see major splitting of the trunk. And the angle of the trunks, you know, where they start, you know, the major trunks start moving away from each other, that angle is very narrow, and that's why they have the problems with the ice storms and things like that. But you, you know, X amount of feet up, depending upon how long the branches are, I don't know how tall it is right now, but several feet up, you can actually start cabling some of the branches together. So in other words, you drill a hole through the major trunk and then, you know, put a, let's say, a bolt and a nut with a washer on it and then run it to another one. So in other words, you're just trying to hold it together. But that's
okay,
about...
So you're tying the left and the right together so that...
Exactly. Right.
Okay. Yeah, I never heard of that. That's a pretty good idea.
So that you could do that, but just realize also, you know, the problem is the angle of the branches slash trunks. But water runs down the trunks, and then there's going to be that sort of center thing where all off the major trunk, all the everything starts spraying out. That's a, you know, has a tendency to kind of have a wet spot there. There's not too much you can do about that, but cabling them all together, that should hold them together.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, good luck with that. And yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's kind of how they are. There's no, and I mean, for the, you know, lifespan wise, I've been to houses where some of them, you know, for whatever reason, they've not had the ice or, you know, problematic. And they're really pretty darn old. They're in the 30-plus years old, and they still look pretty darn good. So good luck with that, Jim. And now let's go to Jane in South St. Louis. Hi, Jane.
Hey there, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
Very good.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have two questions. The first one is, I am having old evergreen bushes pulled out of my front, and I'm trying to think what I'd like in their place, but I'm going to pick your brain for that. Secondly, I have a zoysia that's thinning in my backyard. It's getting old. Would you suggest plugs, or would you suggest sod? And because I have a dog, he has one particular path he follows. So I was thinking, well, since my patio is flagstone, I would put some flagstone stepping stones in that particular area that he could follow. So those are my two questions, Mike.
Basically, where your dog runs back and forth and back and forth, the stones are fine, but his feet may not like that. You know, unless you embed them, and so that's not really going to help. My tendency would be to, you could put an edger along there or something like that if you wanted to, but I would just put some bark mulch there as opposed to doing, that's, you know.
That's what I've been doing, so I'm doing the right thing
exactly,
there.
Because, yeah. I mean, the stepping stones and everything else, you don't want a pathway going down there, because the dog's not, he'll probably just move off the stones and just run along the side of the, you know, stone pathway that you put in.
So anyway, so then should I go ahead, Mike, with the zoysia sod, or should I use the plugs to replenish the grass that's kind of thinning out there?
I would do a combination of both. You know, get a couple pieces of sod. The areas that's the thinnest, you know, cut out the, you know, basically the same size as the sod piece. Turn that soil over and put the new sod in that spot. And I'd mix a little bit of compost in that spot as well. So it may end up being a little bit higher than the surrounding zoysia, but ultimately it's going to end up settling and be about the same height as the zoysia. Then also I would get plugs, and then just put the plugs, you know, randomly in various places. But if you've got some spots that are really the worst, I would do the pieces of sod in those spots.
Okay, and the second question about the evergreen replacement, what do you think would be best to put in their place? This is in my front yard along, you know, by the foundation of my home.
Well, first of all, you know, I would get these out and just kind of take a look. Let your house breathe a little bit, not necessarily put something right back in there. Because if these, you know, whatever they're fixers, whether they're used, it doesn't really matter what they were. The root system is going to stay viable for a little while. So just, okay. You know, go ahead, get those taken out, get the soil improved in that spot. Then, mm-hmm. You know, find out how much area that you want to dedicate to these shrubs. And just, you know, don't put the shrubs up too close to your house. Let the shrubs actually have some space. Then you've got things like globe arborvitae. You've got boxwood if you want a broadleaf type thing. You got, you know, some of the... I mean, there's lots of different evergreens. You got, if you want something really exotic looking, there's like gold thread branch cypress, which is going to have, you know, some different kind of look to it. It's going to be yellowish. So there's many different things that you can use. But I, again, would get that, you know, get the shrubs out of there that you have, get the soil improved, and then take a, you know, go to your favorite garden center with some pictures and ask them what they would recommend. But, you know, gold thread branch cypress would certainly be something I would consider, and as long as in the boxwood and the globe arborvitae. Those are, you know, the globe arborvitae never needs pruning. It grows in a natural round shape. The gold thread branch cypress, some of them get kind of larger, but they're fairly slow growing, so you don't have to worry about pruning them. So that's why I would pick those particular ones.
Wow, Mike, that's why I call you. You're the expert. Thanks a bunch, Mike.
Certainly. Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different, just watch out. Like I said, so many people put shrubs way too close to their house. And then consequently, somebody can't get back in there, let's say, to check the tuck pointing. They can't get back there to clean the windows or anything else. With my house, we live in South St. Louis. We moved from Soulard. And I have actually a steel-edged area that goes around our entire house that I backfill. It's about 4 feet wide that I backfill with rock. That way I have a pathway to get all the way around the outside of the house. And then any kind of plantings I did was further out from that. So that way there are some things that can, you know, let's say get a little bit more rotund and they're going to fill in the space, but that doesn't become problematic. So if anybody has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As I continue to say, the annual cool season weeds are out there, and even though they got winter burn and everything else during that cold spell of a couple weeks ago, you're going to have henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass, prickly lettuce, you're going to have the Persian speedwell, rabbit's foot clover, shepherd's purse. These are all annual weeds. So in other words, there is a variety of clover that's an annual. There is definitely varieties of clover that is not an annual, but this particular one is an annual. Bruce lives in St. Louis. Bruce, how are you today? Hello, Bruce?
Yes, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
I just got a quick question for you on soil improvement issues. I've got an area with trees on a hillside and near the river. So it's a sandy, loamy mix, and I'm trying to get trees in there, and I've got an opportunity to put a lot of chicken manure out there as far as topsoil improvement for the large area surrounding, but I don't want to get too close to the trees. And I wanted your advice about what to do for soil improvement for both surface and subsurface for trees.
Basically, I would say, you know, add compost to the ground. Chicken manure, that's okay. It has, you know, it's a, you know, let's say ability to do too much. It's basically a fertilizer, and it's going to be gone really soon. It's not going to necessarily help the overall health of your soil. So that's the difference between putting something like that down, be it cow manure, chicken manure, anything else, and adding something into the soil like a compost-type product.
Okay, and what would be the recommended depth as I'm improving around the trees, around the new tree ball root area? The 18 inches below the tree root base that I'm putting in, or would it be what would you recommend?
Basically, I wouldn't necessarily put something in the hole. I would dig the hole and then, you know, blend in the around where the trees are. That's where I put the compost, not necessarily down in the hole.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get a feel for, because I've got a lot of trees I want to try to establish.
Yeah, so in other words, three times the diameter of the root ball. If they're bare root, then just, you know, a foot or so, but three times that diameter, but only about 80% as deep. So you want the top crown, where the trunk and the root system meet, slightly higher than the surrounding ground, because there will be some settling.
That sounds good, because my friends have a ton of manure they can spread out over the field near me and improve it. Another related to that, what about end fixers to help with the trees, like clover or anything else to help with the tree?
The clover, what it does is capture nitrogen out of the air. It stores it up in its root system, and until it's turned over anything else, it still stores the root system. So if you're just trying to stabilize the soil, you just realize that clover, as time goes on, as this gets shadier and shadier, is not going to be able to withstand the shady factor.
Okay, that's fine then. Just trying to get a better understanding of how to get some nitrogen back into the soil around these trees.
Right, so you don't, you know, basically, you know, choose your trees carefully. But the nitrogen is not necessarily something that the trees really need. I would, before you did any planting at all, I'd get a soil test done and find out what's in the ground there right now.
Okay.
And that way you can sort of like orchestrate everything from that. But nitrogen only stays in the ground if you put it down for a few days. Then it becomes a gas and goes up into the air. And until there's lightning strikes, that gas in the air, the nitrogen, doesn't come back down to the ground. So, you know, the whole idea of nitrogen being something that's needed is not necessarily, it's a quick, you know, uptake by the plant material, but it doesn't have a long-term effect whatsoever.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. That was getting some misinformation here.
But all the other nutrients, phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, you know, manganese, all that other stuff, those are all very important. But what they're doing is they're also helping build your soil and keep your soil stronger. And that's what's most important.
All right. Thank you for your time here.
Sure. Thank you. And now let's go to Paul, and he lives in Redbud, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mike. Could you give me the name of that cherry tree again that's in the dogwood family?
Yeah, it's called Cornelian, Cornelian.
Okay, and is it a full sun?
Yeah, it can take full sun, but it can take a shade too. If you could, you know, I've seen it. They had it at the Botanical Garden. They have it over in Tower Grove Park, and it's, you know, it's pretty versatile. It's not a huge tree by any means. It's not going to be a big tree. It's not going to be even as big as what classically we think of a dogwood, which is an understory type tree. But it's, you know, it's pretty attractive. And like I said, this time of year to see anything in flower is like, wow, thank goodness.
Yeah. I've got a forsythia on the west side, and it's not doing well because it doesn't get enough sun.
Right.
And I was going to move the forsythia to the other side where it gets the morning sun and everything. Get one of these trees and use that as my barometer, I guess you'd call it, as for my pre-emergence, my fertilizers. I know anything that blooms late winter is the gauge, you know, that's
absolutely
when you put your stuff down.
Right. Absolutely. So the Cornelian cherry should work. Just don't put it too close to your house. Don't put it underneath an eave or something like that.
Right. All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck with that. Yeah, the Cornelian cherry is, you know, it's a very, let's say it's used very little, because a lot of the things that bloom in the early spring, their bloom period is fairly short. So that's where the trouble comes in. Rita lives in Eolia, Missouri. Is that true? Is that how you pronounce it, Rita?
That's it. You got it right. And not very many people do, but you did well. Thank you for taking my call, Mike.
Sure.
I have been given a weeping pussy willow, and it's beautiful. I have never one like this. I don't have a clue how to take care of it. Can you tell me what to do?
Basically, just leave it alone. It's, you know, it's the same as a pussy willow. It's just been sort of like, you know, these branches. It's a grafted tree, just like anything
right.
that's weeping. So, in other words, it's a couple things that are attached together. But, you know, full sun. It's perfect for it. It doesn't necessarily need totally full sun, but it can handle a part shade circumstance. But it's going to do much better in the full sun. And, you know, the pussy willow is just nice because it is another one of those early bloomers. And it's not spectacular, but it's still really kind of unique. And especially with, you know, having one that's a weeping variety. Don't overwater it. It does, you know, it can handle some water circumstance. But overwatering can cause more problems than it does good.
Is it hardy?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the only time anything is grafted, the only time that it's not hardy is if the graft is not really done well and there's some kind of gap or something in the graft where, in other words, the weeping part was attached to the trunk. And then consequently that, you know, if there's a gap or something in there, that's where some problems can come in. And then also as it grows, because a trunk is going to be some virtually probably a pussy willow or some kind of, I don't know what kind of tree it's grafted onto, but it could be sending, you know, some, let's say, branches straight up in the air. Just keep those cut off routinely.
Okay, that was my next question. You know, the branches are cascading down.
Right.
It's just finished blooming. At least I think that's what the blooming was. And now it's getting, it's growing straight up.
Right.
I should cut those off.
Yeah, anything that's going straight up, that is not part of the weeping part of the, you know, of the pussy willow. So this is the growth that's coming off the trunk, and make those cuts, you know, go down and figure out exactly where it's attached to the trunk and cut them as close as you possibly can to the trunk.
Okay. I thank you very much, sir.
Well, sure. And thanks, Rita, for calling. And also, with anybody that has any kind of weeping tree, you start to see growth that's vertical going straight up. That is not part of the weeping aspect. It's not going to get like, wow, that is going to go up there and then start weeping down. No, that's not going to be the case. You're going to end up with a weeping part. Yes, a weeping part, the branches can get taller. The trunk will stay pretty much the same size as it is now. But so just watch out for any straight stuff coming off any kind of weeping plant. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've got about 10 minutes left. So if you do have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Basically, if you grow a lot of plants in pots, I have no problem at all, and I've been doing it for a long, long time. I keep using the same potting mix every year. Now, I do dump it out, and, you know, depending upon what the circumstance is. A lot of my pots right now have spring flowering bulbs in it. So what I do is I wait until they finish flowering and everything. I don't keep the bulbs. I just buy new ones every year from Brightside St. Louis because, it's, you know, to store them and everything else, I don't grow them in the ground, except I do have a few in the ground. But with the potting mix, I dump it all out, I blend it all together, and then I add a little bit of new potting mix, not potting soil, with, you know, just the whole big, you know, I got all kinds of Rubbermaid tubs I dump it into. But what you need to do is realize that if you've grown things in pots and those, that plant material actually had some kind of disease, you know, whatever it was, do not reuse that. You know, that's when I don't use any kind of potting mix, because once you don't know exactly what the fungus, the bacteria, or anything else was, it could be hanging out in your potting mix, and you could re-inoculate the plant, the new plant material for the following year. So just, you know, as long as it didn't have any problems with it, everything was growing fine, that's great. Also, I do clean my pots every year after the spring flowering bulbs, before I refill them with the potting mix. I clean them out. Some years I go, you know, I use dishwashing soap. But for the most part, I just hose them out, get them as clean as I possibly can. And also, if you've had problems in your lawn or in any kind of plant material in the ground, realize that some of those problematic diseases, fungus, whatever it happens to be, could be on your tools. So if you've had a, you know, say, a fungus problem in your lawn, clean your mower blades before you go out there for the first cut and everything else. Clean your shovels, clean all that stuff off, because a lot of times we're spreading these problems ourselves. We're blaming this, we're blaming that, and everything else. And one other thing, too, not related to cleaning anything, but I went out and saw my brother Tommy, who lives out in Pacific, and he said his yard now, he's starting to see armadillos in Pacific. So armadillos, just like the rest of those crazy, let's say, animals, can cause some problems in your landscape. They like to rut for all kinds of bugs and things like that. So anyway, let's go now to Karen's yard, and she lives in St. Louis. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I have a problem with, I had some knockout roses that just thrived for 4 or 5 years and were beautiful, and all of a sudden started dying. And someone told me it was a virus and that I shouldn't plant more of them for a couple years afterwards to let the virus all die out of the soil. Is that true, do you think? Or when can I replant more? They started getting all these little spiny thorns all over
right.
them, and the leaves turned a funny color. They were kind of red, reddish leaves.
Right. That's a disease called rose rosette.
Okay.
So R-O-S, rose, and then R-O-S-E-T-T-A.
Okay.
And that is spread by spider mites.
Oh, okay.
So these spider mites that are coming from a shrub that has, you know, they've been on a shrub that has a rose rosette, they're blown.
Okay.
So, and then if you've got one plant that gets, you know, inoculated with this disease, it is an internal disease of the plant, then it's very easy for it to be transmitted by these spider mites, which are little tiny spiders, but to the ones that are in close proximity. But if you've dug them out, you've gotten rid of them entirely, I would say I wouldn't be overly concerned with, you know, replanting them even this year.
Oh, okay. So I don't have to do anything to the soil first?
You may call back and say, remember when you said I could do this? But you never know, because you don't know what the original source of the spider mites was.
Exactly.
I would say probably I wouldn't put them in this year. I would wait until next year to do the planting.
Yeah. Well, it's already been 2 years. So
okay. Oh, it's been two. You're fine.
I wonder how long it might
right.
take.
So in other words, these bugs don't live in the ground. They only live on plant material.
Okay.
So there's several different types of spider mites, but just watch out. You know, spider mites, as they're feeding, cause discoloration in the foliage of your roses, too.
Uh-huh.
And whenever you're going after any kind of insect that you cannot see, like spider mites, make sure you spray, you know, the miticide. You can't use a regular insecticide on the underside of the foliage as well as on top of the foliage.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yep. Good luck with that. Yeah, I've been growing the knockout roses now. I guess this is this will be my third year in pots. And man, oh man, I've been very impressed with them. I actually got them up at where was that nursery? Anyway, Harvey lives in Wildwood. Hi, Harvey.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
I have new construction, and bottom line, the soil. I have some plastic soils, and I'm trying to figure out what's the best way, because every time it rains or it gets wet, you know, the soil gets real soft and muddy. So I'm wondering what I should do. Should I put down some new dirt and then saw it, or what's the best way to eliminate, you know, these plastic soils or real soft clay soil that I have?
Right. Yeah, you've probably got subsoil. So in other words, it was dug, if you had a basement dug out, and they just sort of spread it around. So it's going to be a long, involved process, to be honest with you. You're not going to get a quick fix to be able to have great success with this. But I would start, again, adding like a topsoil compost mix to your existing soil and just kind of go from there. And, you know, if you need to use erosion netting or something like that, use that. But if you want to put the sod down, that's great. But just putting sod down on what you have without doing any kind of soil improvement at all, that sod is going to be dead within 2 years.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's going to be a disaster.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, that's what people don't quite understand. If it's, you know, when it rains, if it gets that really sloppy, muddy look, it has no ability to hold any kind of the moisture. So it's basically just, you know, making that top few inches or layer of, you know, the muddy soil, the subsoil, really wet. And then that's why you got to mix other things in with the soil that you have so it can retain the moisture and send it into the ground, not just keep it on the surface.
Okay. Well, look, thanks a lot.
Sure.
I've got a lot of work to do.
You aren't kidding. Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's going to be somewhat of a nightmare. But now let's go to Broomsdale, Missouri, and that's where Tom lives. Tom, how are you?
Pretty good, Mike. How are you this morning?
Very good.
Okay, my problem is I got some blackberry plants. They're about 10 or 12 years old, and they bloom real good, but they don't bear no blackberries.
None at all?
No, I don't know if it's a Japanese Beetle getting to them. I'm spraying real good, but they will not bear no blackberries.
Yeah, the Japanese beetle does not eat flowers. So if you got the flowers, why they're not cross pollinating and setting the fruit? That's a little tough. How big are the canes coming up out of the ground?
Oh, they're about 10 or 12 years old. They're pretty. They're probably at least about an inch.
Yeah, I would say those may be the older, bigger ones are probably too old to set any fruit.
Okay.
So in other words, on a routine basis, when those canes coming up out of the ground get bigger than a half inch, cut those out. Cut them all the way down to ground level and just let the newer ones, infill, and they should be able to pollinate.
Okay.
And that's okay. And spraying them is not going to make any difference whatsoever unless you see the insects actually on them. And for the most part, the berries, the blackberries, raspberries, and all that other stuff, they don't really have a whole lot of insects that's going to impact them.
Okay.
So just, routinely fertilize them, add some compost to the ground, that kind of stuff. Just keep them nice and healthy. And if the foliage, the leaf look good on them?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, real good.
So then what it is just you've got some older canes that are past the time when they can produce any fruit. And then the rest of us just, adding something to the soil to help it out a little bit. And, just with the overall health of the soil. And that's probably what I would do.
Yeah, I was thinking about digging them up and replacing them with some new plants. So
you could do that if you want to, but just get rid of the older big canes. And there's got to be some young canes because they're colonizers. They send new canes out.
Right, yes.
So you could add some new ones if you wanted to, but by just using or keeping the old, getting rid of the old ones and keeping the young, smaller ones, you should be fine.
Okay, Mike. Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck with that. Yeah, and you could buy some certainly new ones, and it may not hurt to buy some new ones because there may be something, wherever they're growing or anything else, why they're not cross-pollinating and setting fruit, that's really kind of a mystery. So good luck with that, Tom. And see you, Tom, and thanks to everybody for calling in. Some of the things that you need to start worrying about in the outdoors, as the weather starts warming up, I say warming up, but today it's going to be 40, but then it's going to be 13. But start keeping an eye out for things that, like leaf spot on plant materials, mildew, cedar apple rust, anthracnose, all those kind of things. Just keep looking. Watch your plant material very, very carefully. If you've had a plant that has been problematic from a disease standpoint or whatever it happens to be, consider getting rid of it because it's much easier than trying to get it under control using whatever, even if it's a correct, spray, fungicide, herbicide. You're not going to use an herbicide because it's going to kill your plant. So, just do that. Watch stuff. Start watching really soon because a lot of these things start happening very early. And then from a fungus standpoint, once they're established, the fungicide effectiveness is very limited. So get out there and start, applying fungicides historically if you've had problems on a particular plant before you even notice it. Also, this is a time of year when from an insect standpoint and a disease standpoint, there's something called dormant oils. It's a horticultural oil. You spray it onto your plant material. It suffocates any kind of egg casings from insects. It also can suppress diseases. So a dormant oil spray is a good thing to do. You do that in February. You probably don't have the ability necessarily to get the dormant oil or spray it yourself, but contact a landscape service and have them come out and spray a dormant oil. Particularly if you've had a tree, let's say like a crab apple that always gets the cedar apple rust and you're just tired of it. You really like the crab apple. It has great flowers, but the foliage starts going downhill basically as soon as it starts, showing up because it's going to be, inoculated onto the leaf buds that are right there. So stay ahead of the game. It's going to make a big difference on the performance of your plant material. That's why when we wait till we see something, that's when it's, problematic or trouble. The same thing applies to, weeds, annual weeds or perennial weeds that are coming up from seed. Get those pre-emergence down early. And that way, you're not going to necessarily get rid of everything because of our, you know, our crazy, you know, weather and everything else, but at least it's going to give you a head, you know, a head start on getting things under control. And it's just, it's going to be much easier. Thanks to everybody for calling in, and thanks to everybody for doing a great job in their outdoors. I loved, you know, going to people's homes. I love seeing, just driving by houses and seeing and thinking, wow, they've really done some great work. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
The voice of the Cardinals. News Radio 1120 KMOX. KMOX HD St. Louis. 102.5 KEZK. HD3 St. Louis.